Frank House, Reel 4. So, sorry, we stopped you rather suddenly. So you were going on with
Yes, went on a bit
after
further,
breakfast, yeah.
and then we got caught up in with the we were actually we used to take cover by day, you see, wherever we could, and this particular day we Reg and I there was this little, I call it a little temple place on the side of the road. It's a religious building. And we got in there. It's only one room. It's a very small building. We got in there and we sort of hunched. Reg was over, hunched down in this corner of me here. There was a doorway here and a window there. And the road was outside here, of course. And we take it in turns doing guard there, keeping our eyes open. And we were sort of dozing, and we were uninterrupted there. It was a Greek gentleman, Cretan gentleman, came in, and I said, Kalimeros, which is good day, you know. And he came in with his stool. And he sat down in the doorway facing us. There he was, sat there. He didn't say, I think he might have said, Kalimeros, answer me, you know. And so anyway, we just sat there looking at one another, and Reg was on. Jock was outside, the fairer boy, guarder watching. And suddenly somebody came. Army chap came running up road. He was shouting the alert, the dairies are coming up the road. So, oh yes, what happened was we bombed the game there. I didn't see the bomber, but anyway, he dropped the bomb, and the glass came through the window. And it took the gentleman on the seat. He just sailed off, and I've never seen him again. Was that say this? But it was it was funny, really. But not so funny for the poor chap on his seat. That blast took him. But Reg and I must have been. That blast gone between us. And anyway, poor old Jock, he was killed. So there was this Reg and I. And anyway, there was a bit of a how to do. Army sergeant took charge of the defence of the little spot where we were, and we joined him. So having said that, we then sailed off our own way. And eventually, I'm going into too much detail with the Aussies. That was amusing.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, the Aussies, Reg decided he was going to nip on a lorry because we got these lorries going by. Generally, they were shipping wounded up the road or something or other. So Reg decided he was going to hitch a lift on a lorry, and I said no. I said too many bombers about, you know. I'm Shanksy's pony. For me, I made it so far. I'm gonna stick to my feet. So anyway, I was going off. So Reg was off, gone. So I was on my own. So. So much for being a corporal, I thought. So anyway, I spotted some smoke coming out of little wisp of smoke coming out of some rocks. So I thought I'd better have a look at this. So I went over and I carefully had a look, and piled up with some Australians. There were about a dozen of them there, I suppose, and they were in there trying to roast. They had a little fire going there. And they were trying to roast a chicken. And I can see the Australian now with the holding the two wings over the fire. And
have they plucked it?
It's already plucked.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. And they were trying to roast it. So it didn't succeed, of course, but it was demolished in any case. So anyway, I said, I think my biscuits would go very well with that. You got some biscuits? So I shared the biscuits, and they gave me a wing. No meat on it at all.
Free-range chickens don't have much flesh, do they?
Oh, that's right. So that was my meal for that day.
Where did the Aussies come from? What were they talking about?
Oh, they had been probably like we were around the Suda Bay area, you know. Got quite a lot of Aussies about there.
Yeah. And were they talking about getting evacuated? Or?
Well, they were on the run, the same as me. They were on the run. Mm. Well, poor way to describe it, I suppose, but that's really what we were doing. And but I saw very few. I must have gone a different way than what the main party had gone. We sort of, having got off the road at Suda Bay, we sort of got up over the mountains in a different track, because it was all mountain tracks where we went. Because before we got to the top, the tracks seemed to go round and round and round.
So you went off with these Aussies, did you?
No, they disappeared.
Oh, right.
There was an alert. They had a couple of sentries out, and they sounded off the alert. And these Aussies, I'd never seen anything move so quick. And I don't know what was my trouble was. I think I had an injury up here somewhere, but how I got it, I don't know. It's probably getting over a wall somewhere. But it wasn't due to enemy action. But I wasn't able to move quite as fast as they did. They just disappeared. Disappeared like rabbits, sort of business. And I decided to stay there because it was daylight and you've tied up. Well, it's daylight, and moved during the night with great rapidity. And eventually got to top of the mountain. And that, what a glorious sight that was. You could see the sea the whole way around the island. And I hadn't gone very far before I saw a building there. And a Cretan gentleman looking out, and he had a beautiful black beard. It was all shiny. And in the window, he had two fruits there. And I thought, that's oranges. Oh, wonder if I can get those. So I went in, Kilimiras, and he sort of looked at me, you know. And I said, two oranges. And then I pulled out my money and I had 500 drachmas. And a drachma was worth a halfpenny, a drachma in those days. I had 500 drachmas. So I flashed these 500 drachmas, you know, in front of him. And of course, yeah, certainly help yourself, you know, and gave him the drachmas. And I had the two fruits. And on the way down the path, I thought I better have a go at one of them, you know, keep one for tomorrow. And there were lemons, huge lemons, as big as ones I've ever seen, I think. Of course, impossible to eat. And so I thought, well, the 500 drachmas will do more good than it will be. So eventually I got to Sfakia. On the approach to Sfakia, almost down in the village. And I met one of my pals called Ginger Bence.
And he was in the Marines as well.
Yeah, he joined up with him.
Yeah.
Wonderful to see him. He'd been wounded superficially, not very badly. And he was sort of... like me, not knowing what was happening. And because I remember he first sighted me, he shouted, "Housey," you know. So anyway, it was the same. There was two Air Force boys there that found a tin of pound tin of salmon. Yeah, but they had nothing to open it with, you see. Of course, Royal Marines always carried their jackknives, and we offered to open it for them, providing we could share the salmon. So they weren't going to share no salmon for a bit. We found out we weren't keeping it, you know. I said, "Well, we ain't going to open it." And so that was it. So we bargained with them and eventually decided to share. We had a handful each. So I don't know. Somebody must have held their hands out when we finally got the tin open. And I remember we had a handful each. We were all eating a handful of salmon each, so that was it. The Air Force boys and off for it. So we got down to a chapel. There's a building up above the beach. It's still there. I got a photograph taken with it recently. And Sergeant Major approached us and said, "Right, you two chaps, come with me." And we went into the chapel, and the object was to get the Australians out and any other, mainly Australians. They were all in there taking cover, see? So we went in there to get them out. The Sergeant Major said, "Well, chaps, you're better off out, because if a bomb hits this building, you know, you'll be all killed, whereas if you go out and disperse, you know, there won't be so many casualties." So we got them out. So then I started to thought, well, what's happening? Well, we've had it, you know, Navy's not coming anymore. Little do we know that the volunteer crew came the final night. You might know the history. And the crew that came on June the 1st were all volunteers.
Yeah. And what ship was this?
HMS Phoebe.
Oh, yes.
Phoebe. I'm still in touch with one of the crew.
Really?
He lives up the other side of Glasgow.
All right. Who's that?
I got all the details in there. He sent me a ship's a bit of diary, ship's log.
All right, you've got the ship's log of the Phoebe.
Yeah, the part of his logging that he kept, you know. Mm.
So what sort of a ship was Phoebe?
Cruiser.
Cruiser, right.
Yeah.
And how did you know she was coming? Did everybody know, or how was all this organised? And
yeah, first of all, you see, we were told it finished, no more. And then suddenly we got the message that another one coming. And there was up where this chapel, this building was, keep calling it a chapel, but a building, there was an enclosure, a wall, and there was a path leading down to the beach. And it was quite high up and steep. And where this little gap was in the enclosure, there was an officer and a sergeant major, probably, NCO, officer and NCO, and they checked everybody through. Nobody was allowed through. It had to be an officer and 50 men. So, you see, there were literally hundreds of troops lying around, and I said, "Well, surely there must be an officer here somewhere, you know." And they said, "Oh no, they've all gone." And everybody's saying the officer had all gone. You won't find an officer here. And I said, "Well, has anybody been around to check?" "No, much use. They all gone." So I got up and started running around and shouting, "Are there any officers here?" Trying to crack my jaw a little bit, you know. So anyway, I was advised to sit down, or somebody was going to do something about it, you know, and that sort of scared me off a bit. So I sat down in desperation. And with Ginger Bents, and I found two other boys that I joined up with, and they found me here, right? So there were four of us. So what I'm going to do, and they said, "Come on, Frank, we get out of this somewhere or other." And of course, I didn't mention to you when we went on trips in the desert, I was shaving one morning and happened to look down, and there was two officers' pips in the sand that slipped on your
shoulder.
On the shoulder. So I picked them up and used to have fun with them in the evenings, you know. But anyway, I still had them in my pocket, and I sat down there and I thought, there must be a way out. And then suddenly the pips, and we searched my pockets. I didn't think I was going to find them, and eventually found them, always in the last pocket. And found these pips, put them on the epaulet. I said, "Right." So I jumped up and I said, "Righto, I'm an officer who's going to come back to Egypt with me, or Alexandria, I think I said." So there was a murmur, somebody's friend the twist, you know. So I got 19 altogether, and so we set off. And I thought, well, I tried to get more because I thought if they checked them, there's only 19.
And how many were meant to have? 50, was it?
50, yeah. Officer and 50 men. Mm. So I got up to this checkpoint there, and it was just before midnight, or a minute or two after, maybe, round about midnight. And, of course, the sergeant major, the NCO, had a torch, and checked you up, you know. So I'd been up and reconnoitred before, so I had him on the right shoulder. And name, and I gave a fictitious name. And he said, "How many have you got?" And I said, "Well, the usual number, you know." And then they said, "Righto." I stood there and started to check them, just counting them, that's all. So going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then there was a shout from down below on the beach, "That's the lot." So the officer said, "Righto, run for your life." So I was the first down. And Ginger Fence was the second one behind me, and we were like mountain goats. We ran and ran and across the beach and straight onto this boat that was loaded up. I always say it was loaded up, and I got a load of fish on there, and jumped right on the top of them, you know. And we were aboard.
Did many of your 19 get on, do you think?
Or? I don't really know. I don't think all of them could have got on. I don't think so. But strangely enough, there was one boy got on, and he'd been wounded in his right arm quite badly. I don't know if I could tell you the tale about him. Mm. Right. He was coming along with his section and the officer, and he was wounded badly and bleeding profusely. And the officer said, "It's no use you think you're going to keep up. You'll have to go back and find a hospital, otherwise you'll bleed to death." So he went back. He went back along the road looking for this hospital, and a cretin jumped out with a blunderbuss. I think he was lucky that Cretan and let fly before. But so anyway, he said to the Cretan hospital, you know, and so the Cretan very kindly took him part way, and then he wouldn't go any further, and he said, it's down there on the whatever side, and he left him. So he plodded on, he found this hospital. So he went in through the front building, front door, and as he went in, the NCO inside recognized him and said, what are you doing here? He said, everybody, he said, we've been captured. This hospital is under German control. So he immediately dived him into the room here, attended to him, and then they had to find an easy way. He said, I can't understand how you got in there without being seen. Better go out the back. So he said, you go out the back and across the lawn, so to speak, of grass, like, and there's a gap in the hedge. You go through that gap, you'll be all right. If you could make it across there, you'll be all right. So anyway, apparently he went across this lawn, and all the Germans were relaxing, lying out in the sun, sunning themselves, probably dozed off. And he crept, well, he just kept walking, you know, and he got away with it. Now, he was one of those that got on the boat. He didn't get on the boat. He didn't get on the boat, and he was shouting to me, Frank, 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 because he knew me from slight, as we had mixed in Egypt before he went out. And he said, give us a hand, you know. And I said, well, with the same, the boat had got underway and started to move off, and it was difficult to get people on board, because what was the movement of the boat. And I happened to notice a piece of rope on the side. You see, there were this rope things on the side where people
thread it round.
Yeah, that's right. It one was broken, and I said, "Hold on to that rope." And he held on to that rope, for three. The Phoebe was a mile out. He held on to that rope for at least 3/4 of a mile, and as we went over the waves, he. Being told on behind, he went through the waves and he came up like a goldfish. And I thought, he's never going to make this. Yeah. And I was so uptight about this, I couldn't do anything about it. And after 3/4 of a mile, he said, Frank, he said, I can't hold on any longer. He said, I'm going to swim the rest. Tell them to wait. I never forget it. And anyway, he started to swim, and I thought, that's the last I should see him. He was a marvellous fellow. I'm still in touch with his wife every Christmas. And he made it just the Phoebe started to get underway. They still had the rope ladders down, you know. And he was saved.
And what was his name?
Yeah.
Asking all the difficult ones. Yeah. Perhaps yeah. Something you could look up at lunchtime.
Yes, yeah, so I will.
Surname.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Johnny.
So what was the Phoebe like? I mean, you got on her up the nets, did you?
And yeah, that's right. Yeah. Wonderful. Oh, I got on, I still had my rifle. Dickens, I still have my rifle. I don't know. Of course, I still have my rifle because I was the only bloke that had an American rifle. And
where did you pick that up? When you found, or
no? I picked that one up before I left England.
Oh right.
Yeah, picked that one up before I left England.
What was it called?
Ross rifle. Ross.
And how did you happen to have it? I mean, did you choose to have it?
I got issue with it because the one, my initial issue was no good. No. It was stated, it was a First World War rifle, of course. And it was found to be no good. So the issue, I got issue with this Ross rifle. And it was a wonderful piece of equipment. It had an aperture sight on the end of it. You just couldn't miss. And
so you still had this rifle with
I
you.
Still had this rifle. And climbing up the rope ladder. And this, I sort of got almost up the top and I had to stop for a rest. And this Matt Lowell said, come on, Chuck, I'll give you a hand, hold your hand up, you know, I'll give you a hand. So he pulled me the last few feet. Of course, the rifle still had it over my shoulder, a bandolier across there. Hit him in the face. So he said, oh my goodness, what the sons have you got there? I said, sorry, I spent my rifle. So he pulled it off me when I got to the top and he said, we don't have those things on there. We don't need these things on there. And I saw that rifle being thrown. I could have wept.
So what were conditions like on Phoebe? Pretty crowded, weren't they?
Well, the first thing, we were sent below. And then... of course, the metals were smoke, having the smoke down below, and of course, we were after the dog ends, you know. As the metals dropped the dog ends, so we were picking them up and sharing them around. It was the first thing. But the next thing was the loaves of bread came, and they just, I think they tore them in half or quarters and just threw them down, and we all dived and picked them up. That's how they were distributed. Didn't hand them out to anybody because they just threw them down and those that got them. But there was eventually enough to satisfy all those on board.
What condition were the men on board in? You must have been all pretty ragged, I should think.
Well, the most terrible thing was the acute dysentery. It was shocking. In fact, we were out in the desert when we got back for a fortnight at least on salt and water and dry bread only until we got back to normal a bit.
Yeah. So it was pretty unpleasant on the ship then? Yeah.
Yes, it was. It was.
Did you talk to any of the volunteer crew?
No, I didn't. No, no. There was action stations pretty, all the crew were at action stations. And the skipper, that Phoebe, was a genius. In fact, all the crew said he was a genius. So, and we knew he was because we got attacked three times. And those bombs missed the ship by... Well, you would hear a terrific bang as it exploded, and then the underwater sound hit the side of the ship, and that seemed to be a bigger bang. And I thought, the side of this ship is going to come in. Can't possibly stand up to this huge crash. And it was quite exciting.
Yeah, it was quite a trip.